The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salner, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition, where today we're going to dive somewhat deeply into a tax topic. Now that the first of the year has rolled around, people's attention starts to turn to tax issues, tax prep, tax planning, and we just happened to get an email prompt on a tax-related or tax planning-related topic, pretty specific to this show, because it was questioning what are we talking about with the 210 philosophy. So I've got Jim on the line here. I've got Bob as well. So we've got the inventor of the 210 moniker. That would be Jim. He came up with this idea, decided to call it the 210. We bought into it. Sounded like a good idea. Seems to make some sense. So we've kept it up. Bob's here because he's the true tax brains of the operation. So he'll pitch in and welcome you guys and welcome all listeners here, 2022. Is this the first EDU show of the year? I think it might be.
Yeah. It is the first.
Welcome to the first EDU show of 2022. Two. We did a Q&A show that released on January 1st. So we've got that one out of the book, out of the bag. But this is the first EDU show for 2022. And Jim, I'll let you read the quite short and to the point email that prompted today's show. But welcome, you guys.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Jim, Chris.
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon. Hey. And Chris, I'm Bob, you are in the penthouse suite, as Chris mm-hmm. likes to call it. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the, what do we call mine? The Southern Command Center?
Something like that.
A dead animal room in Jim's house. I'm looking at the very big elk that I have on my wall. But
probably good it's dead if it's in your room there.
Well, yeah, it would not be good if this big bull
exactly.
If this big bull elk was running around in this house, now that would not be good.
No.
I'm getting ready to leave tomorrow for the fine state of Florida. I will be there for a couple of days because I didn't go home to Massachusetts for Christmas because of some familial issues that I did not want to get involved in, would not have made for a very fun holiday. But my mom and sister are down in Florida now, escaping the terrible weather up there in New England. And we thought, well, I'll head down to Florida, spend a couple of days and have a belated Christmas and New Year's with them. So I will be leaving folks for a couple of days, not long at all. I'll be back on Sunday, but hopefully all tanned and looking good.
You're fairly tan by natural skin tone.
True, so. I am Portuguese, so mm-hmm. so I tend to be a little bit on the tan side.
Yeah,
but I don't envision I'll be out at the beach that often. Anyways, we only got 3 days, but it'll be interesting. I'm going to a town called Venice, Florida. Never been mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. I'm flying into the new home city of Trader Brady. Tampa Bay.
Yep.
And then from Tampa Bay, I'll be...
Maybe he'll be there to greet you.
Maybe he will, but it isn't going to work. He can greet me all he wants. I'm not going to give him the time of day. But then I'll be driving to Venice. Never been there. Have either of you been to Venice, Florida?
I have not. I've heard of it. I think it's a golf side, right? The golf side?
I have. Yeah, it's on the West Slope.
Mm-hmm. West Slope.
The Western Slope. Yeah. That's Colorado speak. Yeah.
West Coast.
Yeah. I think I've driven through. I haven't spent any time there, but that whole stretch there from Tampa, I'm guessing it's south from Tampa, but south.
I've heard it's a nice area, nice retirement area, Jim. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking of
plan
B,
you're going to run into a few retirees down there.
You think so?
I think so. A couple of them. Yeah.
My sister has joined a pickleball league, so apparently I'm going to go.
I suspect Florida's the pickleball capital of the world. That's just my guess.
So, anyways, looking forward to it. Couple of days out. I figured I'd get it over with right away in January and then be able to jump into work. So, anyways, folks, this is our first EDU, as Chris said. We got the idea for this from a listener's question, which very similar to me, was pithy and to the point. So,
you keep saying that, and a bunch of new listeners that have come on board recently are starting to get sucked in by this concept that you don't really talk that much on the show.
I will say, for like the past 14 months, you have really been leading the show, not me.
That's not true. Maybe the last 14 days. I've been a little wordy the last few, but that was an anomaly. I'm sure we're going to be getting back to the gym-dominated show here shortly.
New listeners, you go back to any show you want, and I guarantee you, if you time the amount I talk and the amount Chris talks...
There's a difference. He
will win. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyways, short question, interesting topic. It begins, we might need to do a refresher on 210.
No, that's my email, Goofus.
Oh, hold on.
Put him in charge of one thing.
Yeah.
Read the email from the listener, not the email from me.
Gotcha. All right. Never mind. Can we scratch that part out?
No, it's great.
The reason is, folks, usually I have paper, and apparently I don't. It's on my desk, and I'm at home. So Chris forwarded me the email, and apparently I was reading his forward, not the actual email. The email is way at the bottom of the email you sent me. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's from a woman. We're going to call her Georgette. She doesn't say where she's from. It says, in one of your recent podcasts, you mentioned 210 as it relates to retirement. Is there a previous podcast that gives more information on what you were referring to? Thanks. And she leaves her name, which, of course, we're going to call her Georgette. So
I, just to pick up one, just to get to the point where I sent it to Jim, suggesting this might be a good topic, is I went to our podcast website, theretirementandiraShow.com, where you can easily find the archive. If you're using iTunes or something else like that, you'll find all the old shows there as well. But we do have a website for the podcast. Not super fancy, but all the old podcasts are generally on there. And we have a search function. I searched for 210, assuming I'd run across an old show that we did where we talked about this concept of 210 in great detail. And couldn't find one. I don't know if our search function's broken or it's been so long that there isn't a current podcast about it. So that prompted, gee, we talk about this regularly. If she has this question, this listener has a question, I bet a bunch of people do. Maybe we should talk about this. And thus suggested it to Jim, and here we are today.
I think when things are posted, doesn't whoever do the posting have to put like keywords in?
They were there.
So 210 was a keyword?
210 is a keyword that shows up in the description, but there I couldn't find a recent enough podcast
So I know we've done shows on this in the past, but it has been a while, and I think the three of us can do a pretty good show, folks. So before we have Bob kind of explain how he uses 210 in his advanced tax planning, I think we have to go back to the beginning and understand the reason I came up with this concept. So this isn't a concept that's taught in CFP studies or school. It's just a concept I came up with in an effort to explain to clients why you may not want to listen or act upon some of the tax advice you're getting from a traditional tax preparer. And I'm not looking to throw enrolled agents or CPAs or competent preparers under the bus, but when you prepare taxes, you act more as a historian. You're taking what happened the previous year, you're looking at what the client did, you're going to fill in all the forms, you're going to look to see if there's any current exemptions, deductions, and credits, and all that other kind of fun stuff, and you're going to get the taxes done. And you're generally tasked with someone to reducing your taxes today. Hey, you're going to prepare my taxes. Is there any way you can finagle these numbers so I pay less if I owe any money, or get more back if I'm going to receive money? And that's generally what a tax preparer does. Occasionally, they may say, and next year you might want to do this, that, or the other thing. But they're not really looking down into the future. They're not looking 5 years from now, 10, 15, 20 years from now. They're not looking at the death of the first spouse if it is a joint return. They're not looking at the death of the second spouse when children or other beneficiaries may inherit the money. But as retirement planners, we were always, always looking at those different scenarios. Correct, Chris? And Bob, did I explain anything wrong in my summary of tax prep compared to planning?
No, that sounded right on to me. Sounded in line with kind of how things work. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we live as planners. We live kind of in the future, not living in the future. That sounds bizarre, but looking to the future, because we are trying to make a plan for people so they navigate through, and we're specialists or we concentrate in retirement specifically. So we're looking at folks' future in retirement. And so it was natural for us to be looking at those types of situations. You know, how does it, you know, what does it change as far as their overall plan goes if one of them were to predecease the other, which is generally what happens. It's uncommon for both of you to pass away at the same time. So we always look to see if there's any issues. We call them survivorship issues. And since we have such a high focus on taxes at this firm, it was natural for us to look at what are the tax situation, not only in the future as a couple, but also in the future if one of you were to pass away. And then ultimately, for estate planning purposes, what does the whole tax situation look like once both of you are gone? And you have, like Jim mentioned, you've got kids in the mix, maybe inheriting assets that you have and are leaving behind. So it was natural for us to look to the future, just what planners do. But tax folks aren't all, you know, there's, I think, a very small minority in my experience that are really looking with the same degree of focus on the future as we do as retirement planners.
Exactly. And what had happened, folks, how I really decided to change our business model is at the time, this is going back probably 5-6 years ago now, we didn't have Bob. We didn't have any CPA at our firm. We would do what a lot of retirement planning or financial planning firms would do. We would recommend to people, go to your tax preparer and do this, or go to your tax person and tell them this, that, or the other thing. And if we weren't managing their assets, because we are not requiring our clients to have us manage their assets to work with us on a financial planning perspective, we would often tell people, okay, here's your strategy, here's your plan, and we feel you should convert X amount of dollars, say $30,000 this year. So remember to do that before the end of the year. And we would give those assignments, if you will, to clients. Well, one time a client came back into the office the following year after I had delivered their retirement plan, and I did tell them to convert. And I believe the dollar amount was $30,000, although today I'm not 100% sure what it was. But it was a meaningful amount, guys. It wasn't $300 or $3,000. It was, I believe, $30,000. But when they came in and we were chatting again, they told me we did not convert the money last year. And I initially thought it was because they didn't want to pay the taxes. But when I dug deeper, they explained to me that their CPA told them that if they converted, they would owe a lot of taxes this year and that they shouldn't convert because they would pay more in taxes than if they didn't convert. Well, of course you're going to pay more in taxes if you convert than if you didn't convert in the year of conversion, but I was looking into the future. And it frustrated me because Chris and Bob at the time, it was happening a lot. And I said enough. And I had decided then and there, number one, I'm bringing tax planning in-house. I'm going to find a CPA or an enrolled agent. I'm going to start doing that. I'm bringing it in-house. And then longtime listeners will know we had the original junior. Today we have junior, but originally we had junior named Justin, and he had or was going for his enrolled agent designation, and he wanted to do the taxes, and that's how we started. And we went from Justin to another enrolled agent named Joe, to a CPA named Layla, to now an excellent CPA who we are so happy to have with us, Bob. But this is the progression, folks, of what happened at our own firm. But there was another element I needed to come up with, folks. I needed to be able to explain to you, to people, to get you to understand when it comes to tax planning, it's not just where you are today. Yes, it's where you are in the future, but it's also who is going to pay the taxes. Someone has to. And if you do a strategy to reduce, say, your taxes today, which the CPA who told my client not to convert $30,000, they told my client today not to do it. So it saved my client money today. Yes. But I was looking into the future. I cannot remember if we were planning for a widow-widower scenario or a beneficiary inheritance scenario now. But either of those two reasons were why we wanted such a large conversion to be done. I don't know the exact one anymore. So I was looking to lower the taxes either in a widow-widower scenario or in a scenario when their children would inherit the assets. So it started dawning on me that there's a concept many tax preparers and nearly all clients miss when it comes to tax planning, especially tax planning in retirement. Who are we planning for? Who are we trying to lower the taxes for? And more importantly, who are we going to stick the tax bill to? And I started realizing most people are married. Not all. I'm not married. Bob's not married. Chris is married. But Bob, you were married at one point, I believe. And maybe someday I'll get married. But most people are married. So there's a couple entity, if you will, and that's the two. Then there's a widower entity if you were married, or a single entity if you're like me, never married. That's the one. And then there's the zero, meaning neither two or one or are there. The zero is the assets are being inherited by someone or something else. And it just so happens it matched perfectly to 2, 1, 0. And that's how I came up with the concept. And when we do tax planning, and Bob will explain this, but when we do tax planning, we always have to first find out from a client, especially when it comes to retirement planning. Because let's face it, folks, we all know this is the last third of our lives. We have from 0 to 30 is pretty much our first third. Then from 31 all the way to the end of your 50s, perhaps, just before 60s begin, is your second third. And then 60 to 90 is your final third. We know how this ends. This is going to end with a 1 and then a 0. And sometimes that can happen quite quickly. So we have to first recognize, who are we trying to reduce the taxes for? Two of you. And if it's for two of you and you're willing to hand the tax bill to the widow widower or to your children, maybe no conversions get done or very little conversions get done. Maybe you're just going to maximize your current bracket. But when we do a retirement plan and we run the scenario that Chris can chat about, where he has people pass away 5 years into retirement or age 70, so pretty early in that final third of your life, when we project that and you start seeing some of the tax implications, for many people, not all, but many people, there is a big tax increase to the widow widower. So when there's one person, from 2 to 1, the tax brackets are cut right now nearly in half. And you can have a situation where income is almost identical or required minimum distributions are almost identical, but they're being forced through much smaller brackets, leading to a lot more taxes at the one. And then, of course, the zero, if you want to optimize an inheritance to your children, perhaps your children are high wage earners, or perhaps you want to leave your always taxable IRA accounts to children, or being a typical do-it-yourselfer, 80, 90, 95% of your money is probably in always taxable IRA 401k style accounts, because that's how you've been spoon-fed to save. You don't have much tax diversification. When your children inherit it under the Secure Act, they've got to close that account that's always going to be taxed as income within 10 years, decimating much of your hard-earned money by income taxes, not even factoring in estate taxes. So you'll notice, folks, often the two entity, the couple, if you are married, filing jointly, pays lower taxes than the one entity, and the one entity may be paying lower taxes than the zero entity. Or if you have a special needs child or a child that might be in a career that lends itself to being sued, or your child may have spendthrift problems or be married to a spouse of their own that you absolutely despise and don't want any of your inheritance going to. If any of those are happening, then you might want to use a trust. And a trust will be decimated by taxes even worse than a human inheriting money, if that trust is being designed to hold and protect an IRA or a 401k. So that's the concept of 210 planning. Who are we planning for? Who's going to pay the taxes? But it all begins, folks, with the client deciding, either on their own or through discussion with their planner, what is the tax optimization order. So I just wanted to take that time to share with everyone how I came up with the concept. Chris and Bob use this far more in practice now than I do, because I don't do this a lot anymore. I'm too busy running the firm, but they do carry on with our concept of the 210 tax order. That to me is the crucial first step in any tax planning. and had that CPA who told my client not to convert $30,000 been doing that type of analysis, or at least chat to my client about why do you want to convert 30 rather than just saying that's stupid, don't convert 30. You're going to pay a lot more in taxes today if you did that, rather than just being so narrow focused. If they were just taking more of a big picture outlook, I think their tax advice would be different. So that's how I came up with it. Chris and Bob, how do you guys use it in practice?
Before we go to that step, I do want to frame tax planning with a little more nuance. I want to mention one thing, that sometimes tax decisions or tax strategies will clearly benefit you or save taxes for all three entities. So there are certain decisions that can be made that are fairly obvious. And those, I'd say, are kind of surface level tax decisions. Those pretty obvious ones, most savvy planners or tax folks that are giving this a hard look, or even good do-it-yourselfers can identify some of the more obvious ones where it just makes sense to do a certain thing to save on taxes. What we're talking about with the 210 is when you go a little deeper, then there becomes decisions that might benefit one of those three, the two, the one, or the zero, but rarely will you find, once you're past the basic planning, rarely will you find a decision that's made where all three benefit. Oftentimes, you'll find one or two will benefit, but at the cost of the third. That's kind of the best case scenario I see, which is where maybe it's good for the one and the zero, but it's not the greatest idea for the two if you were focusing on the two. Whenever you can get two of the three to be winning, I think that still makes a lot of sense. When it gets down to only one wins and two loses, then the decisions become a little bit harder. But the whole point is there's a whole slew of decisions that are a trade-off. And without the focus of what's the priority, which gets back to this 210 idea, it's really hard to decide how to weigh these trade-offs. And that's where Jim's idea of you know, what the heck is your priority? That helps then clarify what trade-offs make sense, because then the strategies are consistent with what you have decided to prioritize. So I did want to point out that it's not always a trade-off. What the 210 really gets to are the trade-off decisions, but those initial tax decisions can oftentimes be a win-win-win. Everyone should pursue, essentially, because there's no losers in the 210 concept. So I just wanted to make sure people realize there are some basic decisions that you can make that just absolutely make sense. It's when you go past that the 210 becomes valuable because it focuses your priorities. So Bob's probably in the best seat, if you will, to start talking about what some of those trade-offs are and what some of the variables are that would make it a certain decision good for the two but not for the one, or vice versa, and that sort of thing. So Jim, unless you have anything to add to what I said, I'd say maybe we should hear from Bob about how this is implemented, how the rubber meets the road, putting this 210 concept into play.
No, I think you covered that perfectly well. And Bob, just walk our listeners through kind of how you work with a new client, or the types of questions you ask them and what they need to start considering as you put this concept into practice.
Sure. So, you know, I start out with all the basic information that we're going to need to put this plan together and evaluate, you know, a financial picture over, you know, a 20 to 30 to sometimes, you know, even longer period of time. And so I'm going to gather up, you know, the type of information that are going to determine the taxes and what the taxes are going to look like through a retirement plan, through a much longer period of time than, say, 1 year or 3 years or 5 years. We want to look at a 20 or 30 year period. So we want to see what kind of income we have coming in, taxable income, factor in some spending, and start to lay this information out. And luckily, we have a program that does that does a great job of this, and it's called Income Solver. And I like to tell people it's solving a puzzle, because this puzzle is unique for every set of clients that we work with, as far as the balances, the amounts, and the types of accounts, the always taxable buckets, the maybe taxable buckets, the never taxable Roth buckets. We're taking that information and these various income streams, and we're projecting out to start with and see what can we control and what we can't control. And for example, we know in a lot of cases what that income stream, that taxable income stream is going to be. We know what Social Security is going to be. We know what pension income is going to be. Investment income is fairly predictable, a little less so, but fairly predictable. And the largest thing that we can generally control are what those RMD levels are going to be when they start, when folks turn 72 now.
And that's a good point, Bob, just to interrupt for one second. I talk about it frequently. It sounds odd to say it, but what I call forced income, that's that what can we control and what can't we control. And so there are only certain knobs that you can turn in your plan, retirement-wise and tax-wise, but you have to realize there's a base level for just about everybody. Just about everybody has at least Social Security income coming in at some point. You can control when it gets turned on, but no one delays past 70, so at some point it's going to be forced upon you. There's going to be a certain amount of income recognition, and then you throw out pensions. You might have other income sources that come in, rental income. Some people have rentals. And when I say it's forced, it's where you have no discretion. You're going to recognize that for tax purposes every single year to a certain extent. You can't control that. So that really reduces your flexibility the more is forced upon you. And so you've got to first set that up as a foundation and realize then you can only make decisions for what's above and beyond that. And there's another forcing that happens, you mentioned perfectly, RMDs, right? That's another forced amount of income that's going to come out where you have some control over it is manipulation during your tax planning window and maybe even the years when you're still working before you enter the tax planning window, which is that period between retirement and RMD kicking in. When RMDs kick in, now you've got another forced set of income on top of your Social Security and pension and what have you, and the amount of knobs you can turn to adjust your situation are greatly reduced at that point. That's why we do so much work in the tax planning window, and sometimes even before people retire, it can make sense. But getting that idea that you're going to have control taken away from you by having that forced income coming in at some point, realize that, take advantage of the knobs you can turn when you turn them, because as you age, the ability to turn the knobs generally declines. And it's usually because that RMDs kick in and that takes away a lot of control. But just wanted to make clear that whole idea of that forced, you called it uncontrolled income. I call it forced income because you can't shut it off or you wouldn't want to shut it off. Because you need it, right? There's no benefit to turning it off. So just wanted to make that point before you go on.
No, that's great. And that's a great kind of a great way to summarize that, in that those RMDs, that part that we may be able to control. Now, we can't control the tables and the percentages and you know, what's going to happen with the markets. But we have a window of time where we can control the balance potentially. And by controlling that balance is going to control the RMD level, the RMD amount, which ultimately is going to control your taxes in that future year and what those future tax rates are likely to look like. And our ability to control that balance is going to be either spend from it in an order, in an order in such a way that we could spend those balances down. Does that make sense in a tax efficient way? In other words, we need dollars for spending for retirement. We have retirement plans and goals. And if we pull those dollars, depending on the order, that would effectively maybe reduce those IRA balances down. And certainly that would reduce future RMD withdrawal levels down. And that can be a great tax planning opportunity. And then, of course, Roth conversions. And, you know, you always hear us talking about doing Roth conversions, and that's a purely an elective decision to say, I'm going to take some money out of my IRA, I'm going to stick it into my Roth account, and I'm going to pay taxes now on those dollars in hopes that we're going to save dollars in the future. And I guess the third way is maybe through QCDs, where we could donate some RMDs. But that's not really a here or now decision. That's, you know, part of the future plan, perhaps, is to look at that in a way that would, again, reduce the RMD levels, the part that we have some control over. And so if we look at the Roth conversion strategy, we're going to initiate and create taxable income now and pay taxes on that now, which is a voluntary decision that you only want to do if you can look forward and see basically a rate of return, a payback on this plan. Are we going to get this money back? And when? And how much? Is this, you know, because there are some risks involved, and they're identifiable and they're measurable, but we do have to kind of factor those in. And so we start looking at, okay, if we pay some taxes now, which is what causes a lot of tax preparers to sort of knee jerk back and say, don't do that. We have to be reasonably assured that down the road, this is a good decision. And the first thing we look at is it a good decision for the two? You know, we start there for the couple, because if that's a win, it's usually going to be always a win, win, and win. Mm-hmm. If we can solve this tax plan and benefit the two, we're going to come out ahead. And by benefiting the two, essentially we want to bring our marginal effective rates that are forecasted to develop after, you know, age 72, especially after the second person turns 72. If we can bring those rates down, so we know those dollars coming out, the forced income that Chris mentioned, plus these RMD levels or RMD amounts that are going to come out, if we know those tax rates are going to be lower and we can measure that, we can say those are future tax savings dollars in this period of time as compared to spending those dollars now. And if we're able to bring those future brackets down and measure that and save money for the two, we have a winning solution that works very, you know, it works really well and it's easy to solve, uh-huh. You know. But not all plans, because this is a puzzle, this is an income solver, not all plans are quite that simple. And sometimes it's marginal. It's not a bad idea, but maybe it's not a great idea. Maybe it could be a withdrawal strategy planning that kind of works. And so the next kind of question I always ask is, you know, okay, so what about the one? What about the widow, widower? What kind of income? And some of the questions that are going to come out during this process is looking at the income that's going to stay and looking at the income that might go away upon the passing of the first spouse, and what are those taxable income and rates going to look like for that surviving spouse? And then you start looking at what are the chances, you know, what are the age differences between the spouses? Are we a year apart? Or are we 8 years apart? And some family history, which is information that, you know, the client has to pass along to us as planners and say, you know, there's a good chance, you know, for example, my wife might live 10 years longer than me. And so let's run that scenario. Whereas the two was giving us kind of like okay results, we run that for the one, and we see in a lot of cases we might see a dramatic change. And when I say dramatic change, like future tax savings, when we take that income, which may mostly stick around for that one person, that surviving spouse, you know, we may lose the lower Social Security benefit, but everything else, depending on the circumstances, may continue. And we're going to force that income through a single bracket. And we can see right away, you know, the program helps us, but we can see right away what those tax impacts are going to be. And we can say, if you want to plan for the one, if that is a priority, then either the plan we first looked at makes a lot more sense, or we're going to even adjust it further to tweak the numbers to get even a better benefit from that for that one, that single surviving spouse.
And what makes this puzzle so challenging is the number of variables in play. And not everyone has all the variables, but it isn't just, oh, gee, let's look at the federal tax brackets now versus down the road with our income sources. You can usually do that pretty easily with a decent spreadsheet. A lot of the do-it-yourselfers take a swing at that. But then you've got to factor in state issues. You've got certain types of income in certain states that gets preferential tax treatment when you're in retirement. Not every state is the same, so you get a lot of variability state to state. Some states don't even have income taxes. That makes it, you know, one less variable to deal with. But sometimes you're planning to move in retirement, and we have to look at your situation now in the state you're in versus the state you're planning to move to in 10 years. That's a whole other set of variables, too. Then we have IRMA, which is triggered by recognized income. The MAGI, Modified Adjusted Gross Income. We've got, if you're pre-Medicare, we've got ACA premium tax credits that are in play. You've got capital gains taxes, which are affected by the total amount of AGI that you've got in a given year. You've got NIT, which is going to be tacked onto the top on some of these. So it's, and all these different things are going on, which makes it very difficult to fly by the seat of your pants on this, or have a gut reaction. You just look at it and you say, oh yeah, it looks like we should probably do X amount of conversions. It is way beyond what you can do with a gut reaction. And there's even variables that aren't numerical, put your finger on it kind of variables. There's the idea that, how worried are you about tax rate increases in the brackets that you're in? How worried are you about this, that, and the other thing? How guaranteed is this income that you have? How confident are you about living to a certain age? Those are things we don't know, but would be important to consider when designing the perfect, well, I hate to say perfect because there's no such thing, your optimal tax plan that you're trying to put in force for your retirement. It's just super complicated. Luckily, again, we've got good software now that deals with almost all this stuff. There's still some stuff that needs to be manually adjusted, even with this great software we have. But the world is very different than it was 10, 15 years ago before some of these software programs were out there. So it was very difficult to weigh all these decisions before. It's still moderately difficult, but we've got some new tools, luckily. So
I would like to add, yeah, a few things with respect to that, especially when it comes to software. Yes, we have software, and sure, Bob uses it, but true tax planning comes from everything in Bob's brain, not necessarily what the software says. You have to know how to interpret data that software is providing. Chris uses very powerful software. It's Navi for anyone out there who wants to know what we use on the retirement planning side. But Navi alone, if you're an investment advisor or a retirement plan and you go out and get a subscription to Navi, you do-it-yourselfers, you can't, so sorry. But even if you could, Navi doesn't do our secure retirement income process. Also, what Navi gives Chris is data, reams and reams and reams of digital data. It's what Chris does with that data. It's what we do with our collective wisdom from decades upon decades collectively of experience in retirement planning that we have. It's how to take that data and interpret it. And tax planning is no different. Bob needs to know what to do. The software may give him ideas, suggestions. They may rate them. They may suggest this, that, and the other thing. But Bob has to look at that data. He has to look at those suggestions. He has to compare it and review it. We do our planning here as a firm, as a team. So he would present his thoughts and findings, what we call our Tuesday meeting. Today is Tuesday, and Tuesday is when we record the EDU show. But more importantly, it's the day we plan as a team. And we would review it and come up, and it may not be what the software suggests. We may recommend something else for a different reason. So I do want to caution people who think that you can perhaps get a software program or a subscription to it and plug in some numbers and magically you're going to have a tax plan. it goes a lot deeper than that. It goes to the knowledge that Bob has that right now computers cannot replicate. AI, artificial intelligence, is not there yet. Someday it will be, I'm sure, but it is not there yet. So I just wanted to throw that out there so everybody could keep that in mind. But anyways, that's what I wanted to add. But I have another thing. Do either of you want to say anything about what I just said there?
You know, I'll just expand on that slightly from my perspective is, you know, the product and the software I use, it develops the great baseline. It kind of says this is mathematically, you know, where things are heading, and this would probably be good ideas. And then everything else is kind of massaged based off of client discussions, clients' concerns. You know, there's anxiety about these numbers that come into play. No one wants to make a mistake in either direction. You know, be too conservative, have that come back to bite you when a lot of times later on the opportunities to, I won't say fix things, but tweak things in a financially good way for you and your spouse. You know, we have opportunities, and as time goes along, some of those opportunities start to kind of fade away. But there's a lot of emotions involved, a lot of numbers involved, and then this 2-1-0 strategy of where do we adopt that focus, or where do we place that focus, and that is another area where we have to make adjustments, and we're making some assumptions, and all we can do is try to develop like the best picture. We're looking, you know, looking ahead through a tunnel. We're trying to see ahead, kind of planning for what may happen. And luckily, you know, every year we can refocus. We have one more year of history. We're one more year closer to maybe proposed tax changes or tax laws reverting back to what we think is going to happen, and one more year of market returns. And so, you know, each year we're kind of reevaluating and adjusting. So these plans, you know, we have a plan, and we kind of know where we're heading, but we're going to keep adjusting along the way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's not a one and done tax plan. A lot of people look at that, and I was actually just recently seeing a discussion somewhere in social media about, you know, what people really need for retirement planning, and I kind of cringed. One person said, "Well, yeah, what people really need is they just need a nice solid plan to start off with, and that's it. And then they need to look at this, and then it's pretty much done. That's all they need." It was like they had no concept that people age and the world changes, and there's no way whatever plan you did, no matter how careful or quote accurate it was, that the plan actually tracks with what really happens. You've got to react. You've got to be flexible. You've got to deal with things that come up that were a result of your own decisions, and then things completely out of your control. So there's really no such thing as a one and done kind of a plan, whether it's retirement planning or tax planning for that matter, because we're dealing with the future, right? Things change.
I think, you know, things definitely change, and that's kind of our, you know, the way we approach these is this is kind of what we know now. This is ultimately we're trying to create this plan to benefit, you know, the folks that we're working with and solving their needs and kind of anticipating what might happen in the future. And I can tell you, you know, certain things that make big differences in these plans. And, you know, one would be market returns, where if we're forecasting a 5% growth in market returns, and next year is 25%, just throwing out numbers, that's going to create a whole set of different numbers that we're going to have to kind of react to. And where Roth conversions might have been okay idea, now become possibly a great idea. Mm-hmm. Or the amounts increase, or the brackets that we may want to convert up to will start to change. And that's going to go both directions. Spending levels. Sometimes we have folks that come in and this is their spending, you know, ideas going into retirement, and they realize they have more money than they thought they had, and they start to develop a higher fund number. And this is where Chris and his team come into play, and they come back, and the following year we look and say, okay, if we're going to bump spending numbers up to a safe annual amount, that's going to change what your taxes are going to look like, because we're going to need access to perhaps more funds. Where is that going to come from? And that may also change in the short term Roth conversion strategies or withdrawal planning strategies.
Perfect. What I'd like to do, folks, is share with everybody. Bob, you received this. Chris, you haven't seen what I'm about to share, because to me it captures the essence of 210 planning. It has nothing to do with 210 planning, but it captures the essence. So what am I getting at, folks? I'm going to be attending a class in a couple of days. Well, I was going to attend it in a couple of days, except I will be in Florida. And I'm not sure if I'll be able to log in or not. I'm going to try. But I'm taking a class, and I know everyone out there is going to be extremely jealous, because you're all going to want to be at this class on taxation and how to reduce the income tax burden on non-grantor trusts. And I'm sure everybody is just dying.
Everyone's clamoring for that one.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, I know. Scorsese wants the movie rights to that, I heard. But it is a course on how to reduce the income tax burden on non-grantor trusts. Now, I'm not going to get into that. We've talked about grantor trusts. A non-grantor trust is the opposite of a grantor trust, essentially. But a non-grantor trust is a discretionary accumulation trust, a trust for protection and control. Most people will do protection and control of their assets before passing it on. In a blended family situation, it's sometimes done from husband to wife or wife to husband, because it's a blended family. The deceased spouse wants to make sure their assets can be used by the surviving spouse, but ultimately go to their children from a previous marriage. You'll often see this in a blended family situation. So they have to use a non-grantor trust to do that. Non-grantor trusts are nailed with taxes. We have told you guys that forever. The reason is the tax brackets, if you will, are compressed. Chris, did they release? They had to have released the 2022 numbers for trusts to be at the highest marginal bracket in 2022. What's the number now?
Let's see.
Oh, he'll look it up, folks. It's going to be very low, 12,
maybe 13,
7, 13, somewhere around there. So
it's just under 15, but I'll tell you. In a moment. Okay. You can keep talking.
Chris is looking that up. And what we're getting at, a human to hit the highest income tax bracket is about $500,000, Bob, right? Or a little bit more?
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. A trust, if it receives income, a non-grantor trust, which a protection and control trust will most likely be a non-grantor trust, those trusts reach the highest bracket at a little bit less than $15,000, the exact amount Chris is going to give us. And now the trust has to pay the highest amount of taxes, the highest marginal tax rate. And to add insult to injury, they are looking, if the BBBA does pass, or a version of it in 2022, they are looking to add surtaxes of 5% and 8% to individuals whose income exceeds millions of dollars. It is, and gosh, I had that right in here, $10 million and $25 million. But on a trust, $200,000 and $500,000. So if a trust receives more than $200,000 of income, It will pay the highest marginal rate. Why? The highest marginal rate maxes out at a little less than $15,000. And then they want to put a surtax on top of that of 3%. And then if it exceeds $500,000 of income, another, is it a 5 or 10% surtax? 8%. The first surtax, I apologize, folks, is 5%. The second surtax is 8%, which will hit trusts with $500,000 of income. On top of the highest marginal federal bracket and most likely the highest marginal state bracket. Start adding that up, folks. Nearly 40% at the federal level, maybe another 5, 8, 10, 12, 13% at the state level, depending on your state. Another 5% surtax. You could see half of your money gone if you leave income to a non-grantor trust for protection and control. What is an IRA? Either Bob or Chris, answer that question. What does the IRS consider all the assets coming out of your IRA and going into a non-grantor trust to be?
Income.
Income.
It's all income.
Right. So. Your IRA is IRD to the IRS. We're talking traditional IRA, no basis, no after-tax contributions. If there's any after-tax contributions, those would pass tax-free. But we're talking all the massive growth and pre-tax contributions. You see assets, folks. The IRS sees income. You will lose, or you won't, you'll be dead. Your beneficiaries will lose a massive, massive amount. So I'll be attending a course on how to reduce that. And there's not many ways of doing it. Charitable giving is the main route. But what I like about it is the description, the summary of what we're going to be learning. They gave us, Chris and Bob, a little description. They said, hey, this is just a brief description. We're not getting into any exemptions and any capital gains, any royalties. Let's just pretend you have straight, pure income. They want you to understand the concepts, folks. So they dumbed it down and they said, just income. And we have reasonable levels of income, $25,000, $100,000, or $200,000. Now, before everybody starts saying, oh, well, hell, I don't earn that much money. It's not what I'm talking about, folks. I'm talking to all you people with $2, $3, $4, $5 million in an always taxable IRA, a 401k, TSP, 403b, whatever type of tax-deferred account you have. 100% of that money is going to be taxed as income. Unless you have some after-tax basis, yes, but there's very little of that in most IRAs. It's all income. You Vanguardians, you may see the Vanguard this fund or the Vanguard that fund in your IRA. Okay, fine. You guys really enjoy that. You really love managing your money. Stop looking at it as income. Excuse me, as an asset. It's income. It is income that's never been taxed, that just happens to be in a Vanguard ETF or mutual fund. When your trust inherits it to protect it for your children, your special needs child, or your child who might be sued, or in a blended family situation, to make sure you can help your spouse who lives, but ultimately go to your children. In any scenario like that, your IRA asset is going to be income. If you've got $2, $3, $4, $5 million, that account has to be closed in 10 years. Even if your spouse is primary beneficiary, it's not his or her. It's a trust's money. It is subject to the 10-year rule. Sorry, but it is. And that $2, $3, $4, $5, $6 million IRA has to close in 10 years. So even if they took a little bit out every year from a $2, $3, $4, $5 million IRA, It could be $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year being paid into the trust. And the trust has to declare 100% of that as income each year. So look at these numbers, guys, that this course is just saying, hey, this is the problem. Let's just take a simple income using regular deductions that someone would be allowed. They went and said this. If a married human receives $25,000, that couple will owe $60 in taxes that year. If an individual, that's the two folks, $60. If an individual, so one of the two dies, and now it's one. If an individual receives $25,000 of income, they will owe $1,350 in taxes. Now we're at the zero, and you want to protect those assets. So you create a trust. And $25,000 of IRA assets, you Vanguardians, $25,000 of the Vanguard total stock market is being paid out to the trust. The trust will owe $7,500 in income taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's because everything over $13,450 in 2022 for a trust recognizing income is taxed at the highest marginal tax rate, which is currently 37%. Not only that, people always forget the bracket right underneath is 35. That's not a great bracket. That bracket for a trust starts at $9,850. So less than $10,000 of income being recognized by a trust is going to pay 35% or more just at the federal level. That's just straight income tax at the federal level.
Local and state taxes.
Yeah.
Now, folks, what if that trust, what if the entity 210, two of you, one of you, none of you, and again, the zero is an example of using a trust. We're not saying this is going to happen all the time. It's just that the course I'm taking on non-grantor trust and how to reduce the taxation is making the zero a non-grantor trust, which is a trust that is going to hold assets and give the trustee discretion to pass them out. That is the only way to protect and control an asset. So again, this is an example that may not apply to everyone because not everyone is going to be leaving their money to a trust. But the two and the one concept definitely apply. The 2-1 and zero, I just think, is a phenomenal way of getting people to understand why Chris and I don't like leaving always taxable IRA style assets to a trust. What if the trust receives $100,000? Now, that's not hard to do, folks. What if you left $1 million IRA to a trust? The trust has 10 years to close it. So the trustee says, well, I'm going to take 10% out a year, $100,000 a year. That's assuming no growth. I get that, folks. So in the first year, the trustee takes $100,000 out of the inherited IRA, puts it into the trust. Here we go. $100,000 of just income using current tax laws, using the there's no other issues going on. There's no child credit or anything. It's just $100,000 of income, folks. A married couple will pay about $8,700 in taxes. That's the two. But what if one of them died? What if it's Chris or Bob, a situation where the RMD, not even death, folks, let's just look at the two and the one. We see many a times RMDs in excess of $100,000 for the clients we work with. Mm-hmm. So let's just say we have a married couple close in age, so the RMDs are going to be the same, whether it's one of them or two of them. Yep. And it's $100,000. As long as it's two of them and there's nothing else, no other income, no Social Security, no nothing. We're not looking at that. Follow the concept, not necessarily the math. $100,000 comes out of the IRA, but there's two of them. They're going to owe about $8,700 in taxes. according to this summary from the three attorneys who are putting this presentation on. But now the next year, let's just say it's another 100,000 RMD. I know the RMD is supposed to go up every year, but humor me. Let's just say the next year, it's still $100,000. The IRA dropped a little because of the market, so it's still $100,000. But one of them died the previous year. So this particular year, year two, they've got to file single. So it's no longer two, it's one.
Let me take a guess.
Go ahead.
15,100.
15,250. Very, very close. I would say you're right and the attorneys are wrong. But 15 grand, folks.
So close to double. Close to double on the same amount of income, the total tax nearly doubled.
You see the concept of 210, folks? So if this was a client of ours, let's not put the zero in yet. We would be, hey, folks, look at this situation. As long as two of you are around and you have this 100,000 of income, your taxes is 8,700. But if one of you die, it's 15,250. How do you want to prioritize this? Do you want to continue 2-1? Or do we want to flip it 1-2? And if they place the one, Bob is going to work his magic. And he's going to now say, okay, I can reduce the taxes for the one, but most likely the two of you are going to pay more than $8,700 in taxes. You may not pay $15,000, but he's going to have to raise the taxes on two in an effort to lower the taxes in the future when, not if, but when there's just one. So that's the concept. So let's add the zero, folks. Humor me. The zero is a non-grantor trust for protection and control. Special needs child, spendthrift child, spouse you hate and you don't want to get your inheritance if you gave it to your child. Whatever the reason, blended family, your IRA is going to be inherited by a trust. That trust receives $100,000 of income. So remember, married couple, $8,700. Individual, $15,250. Trust, and Bob, I don't know if you did the calculation. If you didn't, just say so. But do you want to take a gander on the trust?
I did not do the calculation, but I will say $33,000.
Oh, wait a minute. Pretend I didn't go, oh, Chris, would you like to guess?
No. Just...
All right, whoever comes closest without going over wins.
26,000.
Nah. 35,000.
Oh.
35,000. Bob, you were damn close. Mm-hmm. Chris, you were way off.
Yes.
35,000. So follow the concept here, folks, of 210, but in this case, the zero is a trust. And all you do-it-yourselfers who amassed millions in your trust want to leave, millions in your always taxable IRA want to leave it to a trust. Married couple, $8,700. Single individual, $15,250. Trust, $35,000. And then the final example they give is $200,000. So now the numbers are getting bigger, but the same thing. Bob, do you have what an individual would pay on, a married couple would pay on about $200,000?
It's going to be right around
$30,000. Okay. And Chris, do you want to take a gander?
No.
You never watched Price is Right because all that you had to do is say 30,000 and one.
And they're always nice to each other, right? When they're standing there at the podium. Right,
and the one guy wants to beat the other guy over the head.
The pool table or whatever.
Exactly. Because if you would have said 30,000 and one, you would have been closest without going over. 30,500. So a married couple receiving 200,000, folks, let's say it's a 200,000 RMD. Little bit of an extreme example. Not too many married couples have a 200,000 RMD. Many, many of you listeners to our podcast have $100,000 RMDs. You know it. And why do we know it? Because many of you have $2, $3 million, even $1 million in your always taxable IRA accounts. Okay. Married couple with 200,000 of income, simple income, no other income, just looking at income. 30,500. Single individual, Bob, take a guess.
41,000.
Chris?
41,001.
He's learning.
He's getting it. He could be on Price is Right. Bob, do you want to go down the hall and pummel him with a pool cue? Because Chris won.
Yeah.
The correct number is 41,500. So you see, folks, it goes from 30,500 to 41,500. These examples are the widower tax penalty. Mm-hmm. That's what we call it. Why? By mere fact that one person died, it's the only thing that's changed in this family. Person died, and they owe more in taxes merely because of death. 210. What would a trust owe receiving 200,000? And this is not an impossibility. If you're going to leave a $2 million IRA or a $2.5 or a $3, and we have clients who have significantly more than that, or podcast listeners, not even clients. We work with all clients, whether you have $500,000 or in an IRA or $5 million. So we're not trying to disparage people with lower amounts in an IRA. Don't get discouraged. The same concepts apply to you. So $200,000 coming from an IRA and being paid into a non-grantor discretionary trust, which is the type of trust that is going to receive those assets, unless you're leaving it to a charitable remainder trust, a CRAT, charitable remainder annuity trust, a CRUT, or a NIMCRUT, net income makeup, charitable remainder uni trust, all types of trusts we talked about in the past. Unless you're using one of those trusts, this $200,000 will be subject to about $72,000 in taxes. 210. 30,000, 41,000, 72,000. Who are we planning for? Too many of you are just concentrating on two and you're ignoring one and zero. Only you guys can decide, not us as planners. We can give you the numbers, the data. But only you on a personal level with your spouse can decide your tax ordering. And if you're working with a tax person or a financial planner and they're not talking about these concepts, I'm not saying you got to fire them and find a new one, but you got to bring them up then and say, hey, guys or gal, what's going on? Have you looked at what's going to happen when one of us dies? Have you looked at what's going to happen when two of us dies? I've told you I'm leaving this money to a trust, and you've never told me what's going to happen. If you're working with an advisor who's not bringing this up, or if you're a do-it-yourselfer and you despise advisors, if you're not thinking of this, you're doing yourself a disservice. That's the importance of 210. Yeah. Anyways, I wanted to bring that up, and I might be able to get a recording of this class. So if either you or Bob want to hear it, I'll let you listen to it.
Yeah, if you can get a recording, I'd totally listen to it.
I don't know if we get one or not, but I'll let you know.
I like how you brought these examples in because that really brings into focus the issue with actual numbers. And particularly the, you know, just the examples with 25,000 of income. Those are fairly modest amounts. These aren't, you know, the uber rich that are going to face this situation.
Now, well, look at that penalty, Chris.
Absolutely.
$60 as a married couple.
Yeah.
$1,300 as a single.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's outrageous on a percentage basis in more taxes.
Yep. So I'm glad you brought that up. That was a good way to illustrate what we're talking about and the trade-offs involved. And a lot of the manipulation you can do, there is a certain point where you don't have enough flexibility to manipulate it much. It can be, quote, too late. That too late is usually when RMDs kick in. Or the closer you get to RMDs, then that flexibility gets taken away from you and you now have forced income that's going to happen. But it is possible, even after RMDs, maybe some additional work can be done. But the sweet spot, the time period that you don't want to waste, that tax planning window, retirement to 72, hugely important if you're worried about this kind of thing. That's where all the really good work can be done. Really aggressive, if it is warranted. Maybe it isn't warranted. If it's something of concern, you need to look at it and decide. Don't waste it, because once that window closes, right, and it's slowly closing over time, because there's only, you know, there's only so much you can do. It's not like you can solve this all with one massive strategy in 1 year right before RMDs start. Why? Because you can't, it doesn't make sense to raise your hand and volunteer to pay enormous amounts of taxes, right, through the highest of tax brackets in any 1 year. You've got the constraint every year. So you got to work underneath this ceiling during the tax planning window. Well, we're bringing all kinds of architectural features here into the discussion, but you've got a ceiling every year where it doesn't make sense to go above that ceiling. So you've got to take advantage of time. That's the opening over the years of the tax planning window itself. Don't waste it. Don't waste it. A lot of this tax stuff needs to be figured out, not way before retirement necessarily, unless you think that while you're still working, you have some opportunities. But certainly the year of retirement and beyond, you best be looking at this, or you might wake up one day realizing you squandered a great opportunity during that tax planning window. So just wanted to leave it at that. Anything else before we sign off?
Bob, do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners with 210 and how you would like them to consider it or think of it?
You know, just a couple things, actually. The widower, the one, when we're planning for the one, just a couple of statistics that I tracked down. There is a 75% chance one spouse survives 5 years or longer than the other spouse, mm-hmm. and a 50% chance it's 10 years or longer. So those differences that, Jim, you brought up between the mm-hmm. tax brackets or the taxable amounts based off of those various income levels, there is a 50% chance those are times 10.
Yeah, good point.
So that when that one becomes a priority, that certainly changes how we look at the program and run mm-hmm. the program.
And when the longer expected mortality spouse is also mm-hmm. much younger than the other ones, these numbers get blown up even more.
That's right.
So yeah, all this stuff to be considered.
And then the zero, you know, when that becomes the, you know, priority through the discussion with a client, that can easily either be kind of an easier plan or a very difficult plan, depending mm-hmm. on who the zero is. You
yeah.
know, the trust that Jim talked about, you know, we have charities, and then kids, and kids sometimes depends on, you know, of course, what their income levels might look like and what their tax situation is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And we might be thinking 20 or 25 years down the road. So if your kids are in college, you're saying, well, they're not, you know, making a lot of money. What are they going to be making 25 years from now when maybe they inherit a $5 million IRA and in even numbers have a $500,000 withdrawal per year for one child, or, you know, split that in half if there's two? Those can be enormously high tax brackets. So then it begs the question, is that a family tax planning concern? You know, for some people that is, for other people, and there's no right or wrong, you know, answer in my book, the kids can pay the tax, and that's mm-hmm. a fine answer too.
Mm-hmm. And the trust situation that Jim illustrated for the zero is that's worst case scenario, essentially pushing mm-hmm. it through those trust brackets. But maybe the zero is actually attractive. Maybe the zero is a good tax situation for certain people. Maybe you've got eight kids, right? Talk about some tax, you know, spreading it over. All that income that gets inherited is now spread among eight different tax returns during the year. So it isn't so much how long you can stretch it in time. Sometimes you can stretch it wide.
That's
with
right.
a lot of different beneficiaries. And you don't have to name your kids as beneficiaries. You spread it among enough beneficiaries, you're going to really reduce the zero tax effect. So for some people, it's a big concern. The zero is really scary, like Jim walked through. That's a really scary situation, leaving it to a trust. For other people, the zero is a blessing. You know,
right.
It's all unique. And that's the point. Everybody is different. Everybody's different. You got to look at it for your specific situation. There's not a one-size-fits-all tax strategy by any means.
No, and I agree with that, because if you have multiple children to spread it out amongst, there's multiple brackets. And, and if you don't have enough children, I mean, you can leave it to like your favorite podcast host. That's perfectly legit way of reducing your taxes.
Perfectly legit. Yeah.
Chris says that's okay by him.
Yeah, I'm okay paying the taxes on any of that. Exactly.
But I'm just giving random thought ideas. That's all. I mean, it's just off the top of my head. And if any regulator is listening, we're joking.
You're right. Yeah, and so the zero would, if the zero is charity, if the zero is going to be charity, and let's say we take a couple of the two and they're able to live comfortably on their retirement income, and they have sufficient funds in maybe taxable brokerage accounts to spend from, then maybe part of the tax planning is to not do conversions and let those IRAs build and donate them to the zero that's not going to pay tax in that situation.
And you can donate them during life through a QCD, qualified charitable distribution, as well. So, I mean, now we're getting a little deeper into the weeds, but Bob is correct. And we as a firm generally encourage our clients not to convert assets inside an IRA that they will be ultimately donating to charity.
Right.
And if the RMDs of that charitable money will mess up their current taxes to the two or the one, then we can use a QCD to eliminate that issue as well. So ultimately that money will go to charity and they don't have to pay any taxes on it. The QCD while they're living, and then the charitable distribution or donation rather at death. So why convert if you're going to leave to charity? We run into that a lot, correct, Chris?
Yeah, makes no sense. You're paying taxes. You're robbing the charity of money that could otherwise go to them when you pay the taxes.
Right. You're spiting your face to feed.
Whoa, that's getting pretty scary.
No.
Stitch in time.
No. Stop filling my head. Hold on. You're spiting your face.
Tearing teeth from a baby.
Shut up.
Baby bathwater.
You're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
There you go.
Thank you. I knew I'd get it.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Yes, I nailed it. Okay. With no help from either of you shouting other answers.
We were trying to be helpful.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Well, that'll have to wrap it for us. We're getting a little long here. So want to really appreciate the prompt for the question. Hopefully the new listeners that really haven't heard us talking about the 210 concept now have a good grasp of what we're referring to here. Talking about tax planning as part of your retirement planning process, it should be considered, should be looked at to see if it affects what you'd like to do in your optimal strategy. Thanks, you guys, for joining. I'll be back on this week doing the Q&A show with Bob since Jim's going to be gone. I'm going to figure this would be a good time for us to clean up some outstanding tax questions that we've got in. And so you'll hear from Bob and I here in the next Q&A show in a few days. You two take care. You have a good, safe trip to Florida, Jim.
Thank you.
And everyone else, we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.